Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Tuesday, the 1st of March. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Senegal hosts a large military exercise bringing together counter-terrorism forces from Africa and the West. This gendarme explains why he's taking part.
Actuellement dans le monde, le terrorisme est en train de faire rage.
At the moment, terrorism is spreading across the world, and here, next to Senegal, at our borders with Mali, we are seeing this phenomenon grow.
And while that exercise was in progress in West Africa, at least 30 people were killed in a twin bomb attack on the Horn of Africa in Somalia. We hear why counter-terrorism there hasn't stopped the bombers.
We have AMISOM forces, but they're limited. They cannot be able to provide security to each and everyone. They have to be limited to certain places.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
It is a large military exercise. It's been held every year for the last decade and brings together African, European and US counter-terrorism forces. It's known as Flintlock and has just come to an end for this year in Senegal. Amid signs of increasing collaboration between militant Islamist groups across North Africa and the Sahel, the hope is that this US-led training in counter-terrorism can help increase preparedness in Africa. Emmanuel Lande saw the training in action.
Fire in the hole! Fire in the hole! Fire in the hole!
A suicide car bomb just went off on a Senegalese military base. The explosion was controlled and law enforcement personnel will now have to solve the investigation thought up by the FBI.
We've been conducting several trainings here in Chess, and the FBI has been conducting a specific training focusing on counterterrorism investigations, post-blast investigation, and how you exploit a crime scene to gather intelligence and leads to provide those officers in the field to actually assist in countering the threat.
That's Billy Alfano, a special agent from the US Bureau of Diplomatic Security. Some 1,700 soldiers from more than 30 nations, including 14 African countries, have been taking part in field and classroom exercises at various locations in Senegal and Mauritania for Flintlock 2016. With jihadists in Africa increasingly resorting to attacks on markets and security forces, this year's training focused on improving police and military preparedness, particularly for urban warfare, as well as promoting the exchange of information among participating countries. This gendarme from an investigation unit based in Dakar, who asked not to be named, took part in a post-bomb investigation scenario for the first time in his career.
Actuellement dans le monde, le terrorisme est en train de faire rage.
At the moment, terrorism is spreading across the world, and here, next to Senegal, at our borders with Mali, we are seeing this phenomenon grow. So it is better that the people be prepared, in case you never know, we are targeted like everyone else.
For Major Issa Diack from the Senegalese National Police, the exercise's real-life scenarios pushed the on-the-ground training to another dimension.
We don't always have the opportunity to blow up a vehicle. So it's going to be a sizable learning experience to see the life-size explosion of a vehicle and be able to look for evidence that will allow us to establish leads for the investigation.
As part of the regional exercise, National Police, the Gendarmerie and customs officials on the Mauritanian and Senegalese side were trained together on strategic, operational and tactical levels. Here's Victor Lloyd, an FBI supervisory special agent flown in to oversee the exercises.
Obviously, terrorism doesn't recognize any borders. And we see a lot of times where there's a nexus to multiple countries. So we want to be able to say, for instance, they collect evidence here in Senegal, it may be relevant to a case that we're working in the United States or something that they're working in France or anywhere else in the world.
Past terror attacks also provide important lessons, Lloyd explained.
One of the major failures and one of the reasons that 9/11 happened was because there was not a lot of cooperation in the sharing of intelligence between intelligence and law enforcement entities. So having that lesson, we want to make sure that we have other countries learn from the lessons that we've learned.
This year's exercises were held only weeks after an attack in Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou, left 30 people dead, and months after another deadly attack in a hotel in Mali, both claimed by al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. Counter-terrorism training, like Flintlock, is attracting more and more governments, bracing themselves for a long-term fight against jihadist organisations.
Emmanuel Lande, we move now from counter-terrorism training to a genuine act of terror. Al-Shabaab militants have claimed responsibility for twin bomb attacks that killed at least 30 people in a busy restaurant in the city of Baidoa in Somalia on Sunday. Attacks by militants have been on the rise there in recent days. My colleague Isaac Mugabe asked Emmanuel Kisanjani, an expert on Somalia, what this told us about the prevailing conditions in the country.
It demonstrates the challenges of dealing with an insurgency that assumes this cybernetic warfare. So the problem is that we have AMISOM forces, but they're limited. The extent to which, comparing in terms of the ratio of individuals in Somalia, they cannot be able to provide security to each and everyone. They have to be limited to certain places. So like it has been argued, until you have Somalia having its own security agencies working well, it will be difficult for only external forces to try and ensure security in Somalia.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta said AMISOM needs more international support to defeat the Islamists and strengthen Somalia's weak government. Do you see this support coming in anytime soon from somewhere?
I don't think. One key challenge on Somalia has been that there has been a lot of rhetoric. You know, there are meetings in London, in Turkey, where international actors pledge to support the government in Somalia. There has been some support, and some people argue that financially that the government in Somalia has been managed some funds. But also there's on the other side the argument that external actors have not contributed to supporting Somalia sufficiently. So there's a lot of talk. For instance, there was that promise to the AMISOM forces for these helicopter attacks to support the operations, which have not been forthcoming. And if you look at the incident like where Kenya is involved, the El-Ad incident where Kenyan troops were killed, there was simply nothing that other AMISOM forces could do other than Kenya itself bringing in its own troops from Kenya and other tools to try and confront the attackers. So you find that AMISOM is facing serious challenges.
What is that missing link that would enable Somalia to have its own security apparatus in place?
What needs to happen is, other than the capacity building, Somalia needs funds. You know, one challenge has been where you have Somali recruiting individuals, then they get into these institutions like the police and they're not paid for a very long time. When you have Al-Shabaab raising funds from different sources, from taxing and from other external sources, and they're able to pay on time. So people, police force defecting to Al-Shabaab. So you have these challenges where, rather than building institutions, you also need substantial funding for Somalia to be able to operate its own police and army, have its own security agencies operating to sufficient levels.
Emmanuel Kisanjani, and we apologise for the poor quality of that line.
News, analysis and feature reports, all that here on Africa Link.
The president of Turkey, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, is in Ghana today, the second leg of a tour of West Africa. He has already been to Ivory Coast and is also expected to visit Nigeria and Guinea. Why is he making this trip? His office says it is to deepen Turkey's strategic partnership with Africa. Financial consultant Kisi Agamang Togobo has been giving Isaac Mugabe the details.
I think it's a great development in terms of relations between Turkey and the sub-region. It's part of a long-standing strategy by Turkey to develop ties and strengthen bilateral relations with the continent. And this is just, you know, a part of that trend. We can expect there to be discussions relating to productive sectors that Turkish investors will be interested in. I mean, just recently, the Turkish foreign minister has been talking about wanting to deepen and strengthen ties with the continent. And last year, there were a series of visits as well. And this was preceded by other initiatives, such as a large trade fair, which was held in Lagos in 2013. So it really just forms, crystallizes this developing relationship between Turkey and the continent.
And what could be Turkey's specific areas of interest in West Africa?
Well, I mean, Turkey already has strong relations with the ECOWAS region. As I understand it, Nigeria, for instance, being the largest economy on the continent, country that Turkey has focused on. And already I understand that Turkey imports a large amount of sesame oil from Nigeria, for instance. But there's going to be a lot of bilateral and commercial relations that are going to be strengthened. Of course, in Ghana, Turkey has cemented its relationship, being the country to have provided the car power ships, which have helped to alleviate the power crisis in Ghana. So sectors such as energy, I'm sure, will be featuring highly, manufacturing, agribusiness and textiles.
And how can you quantify the benefits that have come along the ties between Turkey and Africa?
I'd say that in general, bilateral trade between Turkey and the continent was around $23.4 billion in 2014, which is a tenfold increase since 2000. So there's definitely been a huge rise in the relationships there. And as I say, you know, Ghana has gone through a really tumultuous time over the past 3-4 years in the power crisis, and it's affected businesses across the board and domestic, you know, people domestically as well. So for there to have been a temporary solution provided by a Turkish company in the provision of these vessels to supply power has been seen fairly positively, at least in the fact that the power outages have stopped or have greatly reduced since the end of 2015.
Financial consultant Kesi Agamang Togobo.
Africa on the move.
And this week's Africa on the Move takes us to Kinshasa, capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, where we meet Huguette Tolinga. At the age of 7, she upset her family by wanting to play the drums. They were upset because drums are a male preserve in the DRC. But she was undeterred and now wants to open a music school for young girls where they can play the instruments of their choice. More now from Christina Kripal.
Huguette Tolinga loves music more than anything, but above all, she loves her drums. For 15 years, the 22-year-old has been practicing and playing drums whenever and wherever she goes.
When I'm on stage, it's like I'm up somewhere, but in the end, I find myself still on the ground.
The percussionist lives in Kalamu district, where she rehearses with her band, Hugembo. In Congo, women are not allowed to play drums, so Tolinga had to learn everything on her own.
At first, it was really difficult. It was not easy till my family accepted what I'm doing here.
Huguette Tolinga has now gained acceptance. She is admired by her family as well as male musicians. Her band members are equally proud of her.
Normally, I play with men. Huguette, for me, is different from other women. I find her simply great.
It's amazing. Strange, but amazing. For me, this girl is extraordinary.
André Yoka is a researcher at the National Institute of Arts. The professor of music says that the drum is sacred for the Congolese people. It is a kind of a fetish, just like the woman. This makes it difficult for women to play drums.
La femme est fétiche quand vous allez à la guerre.
A woman is a fetish. When you go to war, do not touch a woman. When you go fishing or hunting, you don't touch a woman. If you touch the woman, you lose. Thus, a woman is also a sacred object, and two sacred objects cannot be together.
Donc deux objets tabous ne peuvent pas être ensemble.
But Huguette Tolinga is not about to give up her dream. She encourages other women to do the same. Huguette Tolinga is now well known in Kinshasa, but she still has problems. She has been looking for a producer to support her, but in vain. Nevertheless, Tolinga keeps going on.
One day, I'll open up a cultural center to train artists.
For me?
Huguette Tolinga is a role model for many girls. Now she wants to get to the top and become a big star in Congo.
Christina Kripal. Next we go to the Ghanaian capital, Accra, where more than 150 Roman Catholic bishops have been in conference. Isaac Kelechi looks at some of the issues that they have been discussing.
The over 150 Catholic bishops across the continent gathered for a week discussing growth of the church and the continent. Details of the communique at the end of the event were highlighted by Bishop Anthony Boa of Liberia.
Increasing insecurity, in particular the terrorist attacks which hit some of our countries like Nigeria, Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, Cameroon, and Chad. The phenomenon of migration which attacks an important number of African youth, bad governance, corruption, social injustice, and also the issues of contraceptive impositions.
Use of contraceptive, abortion, and homosexuality were highly discussed, and the bishops took a strong stance against them. The newly elected president of the West African Bishops' Conference and Archbishop of Jos in Nigeria, Archbishop Ignatius Kaigama, said the Catholic Church is not softening its stance, especially on homosexuality.
And when it comes to marriage, we emphasize, based on biblical and cultural beliefs, that marriage is between a man and a woman, and that anything outside of that contradicts our cultural norms as well as our religious beliefs as Christians. It is a position we have taken, and this is where we stand as Africans.
In Ghana, the laws don't allow same-sex marriage. Gays and lesbians fear being attacked by the public. On the other hand, abortion is only allowed when the mother's life is in danger. According to Reverend Gabriel Charles Palmer Bakel, Metropolitan Archbishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Accra, the church's firm position is meant to instill discipline and self-control among its congregation.
Our problem about contraception is that very often when you use surrogates, it has repercussions. So I believe that just as we ask athletes to do a lot of human self-training, we can also train couples right from the beginning to control oneself themselves and to give to each other that which is the best.
Like Ghanaians of other faiths, the over 3 million Catholics in Ghana generally believe in the teachings of the church on abortion and homosexuality. The biggest challenge, however, is for the church to convince youthful Catholics on the use of contraceptive.
You can't stop people from having sex when they are not married. Once you can't stop them from having sex, you need to find optional ways of making it safer for them. To tell them not to use protection, that's a doctrine that will not hold with many, especially young Catholics.
I think the church, even though the doctrine is still there, they have made it clear that they are not softening their stance on it. Getting that information to the people is different, because I can assure you that more than half of the people sitting there watching you when you are preaching in the church, half of them use contraceptive.
And that report was compiled by Isaac Kelechi.
Making a difference.
Community radio stations are operated, owned, and influenced by the communities they serve. The idea is that they should offer an alternative to commercial and public broadcasters and play a central role in keeping communities informed. In Niger's capital, Niamey, the NGO Espace Citoyen runs one such community radio station. Here's Sela Onoko with a report by Fredris Kenham and Julia Heinrichmann.
That's the sound of a road roller levelling out the ground in a neighbourhood of Niamey. The houses here have gone. They were knocked down just a few weeks ago. A new bridge is being built, as well as a bypass. The residents, however, are still there, living in the ruins of their former houses. In the midst of it all stands Chatou Mahamadou. She's a human rights activist and wants to give the displaced a voice. That's why she's producing a live radio show here between the ruins. She explains to her listeners that three generations lived here in the center of Niamey before they were expelled to give way to big infrastructure projects.
When we do a program like this one, those who rule the country see that they have to govern better and that they did something wrong. They learn that they have to change their behavior. If there are some people with goodwill up there, then hopefully things will change.
Chatou Mahamadou works for Espace Citoyen, which is French for the citizen's space. It is the name of the human rights organization which runs Radio Alternative. This community radio is aimed specifically at women and the young. It broadcasts in Niamey and the surrounding areas and is very popular for its informative and interactive content. There is a youth club of listeners with 350 members who share the aim of defending civil and political rights. The subjects touched upon by Radio Alternative include human rights, the situation of women, the poor level of education in Niger, and corruption. No wonder the government considers the program to be a thorn in its side. But the journalists are undeterred, says Mahamadou.
Why should there be any taboos? If there were, that would slow us down. And I don't want any slowing down of social life. We have to break down the barriers. Everything must be clear. That is transparency. The world has to develop, and we have to continue moving forwards.
Mahamadou grew up with six siblings on the outskirts of Niamey. Her father had two wives. The 41-year-old says she learned with her family to have the courage to face all the difficulties. Uncommon for Niger, her parents gave her the freedom to choose her profession and did not marry her off against her will. As a child, Mahamadou was very demanding, her mother says. Already as a child, she was so curious. She always wanted to know exactly what's going on around her and everywhere. She asked lots of questions, and we always had to answer, even if we didn't always know everything. It is this kind of self-confidence that allows Mahamadou to go out and meet all kinds of people, especially those who usually don't get to have their say. At the building site in the town center today, she has given a voice to more than 10 families. And Mahamadou promises not to stop until the people forced to live in the ruins of their houses get a bigger compensation from the city authorities.
Fredris Kenham and Julia Heinrichmann compiled that report. A reminder of our main stories. Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for a twin bomb attack that left at least 30 people dead in the city of Baidoa in Somalia. We've also been hearing about the US-led flintlock counter-terrorism exercise and about the visit to West Africa by the President of Turkey. Please remember, we welcome your comments on this programme, either via SMS to country code 49160957595510, in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or in a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. From me, Mark Caldwell, thank you for listening and bye now.